the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to our listeners. This is the Nonprofit Snapcast. I still have a great conversation happening with Robin Muck. Robin does a lot of insurance and risk-related things in the for corporate and nonprofit sector, I guess is the correct way to say it. But I think this episode, I'd like to talk a little bit more about best practices for nonprofits and how they go about doing their business, especially as it may apply to their events, if we can, you know, get to it. But let's start, of course, with the big picture and try to drill our way down. Robin, what do you think about when you think of the average nonprofit, what are some of the best practices that they should be doing to decrease their liability?
Well, I think that in terms of that's kind of, it's very broad. So I'm trying to think of a way to compact it. I think that having strong leadership is always helpful and critical. I've seen some nonprofits that seem a bit scattered, and even some really large ones that it's actually at times surprising that you think, wow, how are they doing this when it seems like they're kind of a mess, honestly. And not having the right strength and leadership that can drive them in the right direction. Some of them just aren't paying attention to things like safety and policies, procedures, getting people to sign, to review contracts, to have appropriate contracts in place. We see nonprofits that, again, are moving so fast and they're trying to do things that by the time they get to us with a contract, we'll say, do you realize what you've agreed to? And that's, you're accepting liability that you shouldn't have. And that's kind of a big one. And I actually had a very large client that you would recognize the name if I said it. They're international. It was one of their regions here. And they had gotten into a situation where they signed a contract that they accepted so much liability, and it was significant. Now, luckily, they got it to us before they inked the deal, and we completely changed the contract entirely. And they ended up changing it with several other of the organizations around the country because they were all doing the same thing. Sometimes contracts can get them into very big trouble. And because they haven't started their organization with having a strict policy, procedure, you know, they're a business. You know, we always say nonprofits they're a business. They just have a different tax status. You need to have good leadership, a good CFO. If you don't have an attorney, you need to have at least access to an attorney that can look at things and make sure that you're doing things properly, because a lawsuit, a big claim, and a growing nonprofit can become an out of business, not for profit.
So it really does come from the top down. You have to have the right leadership in place to actually make sure that even little things like reading contracts get done, never mind the decision making around what the contract is stipulating.
Exactly. I mean, they need to understand that they're a business, and that's the best nonprofits that I've worked with or seen are run, they're businesses. They have a different tax status, but they don't lead with being, I mean, yes, they're a nonprofit and they're obviously looking to raise money for missions, but they're out there running a business. That is when you don't have the right people at the helm, that gets away from you. And then they'll start just willy-nilly making decisions and doing things that aren't in their best interest. One of the things that we've gotten involved in was, you know, clients will ask us, there are a lot of nonprofits that are doing social enterprise to raise money, have a business within their business. And it's a fantastic idea, and it can be extremely, you know, financially helpful for them, for the organization. But you have to look at what you're doing and how you're doing it. So we'll be involved. Hopefully they'll ask us before they've done it. And we'll say, well, let's think about how you want to do this, because you didn't think about how much it would cost to insure this sort of an entity if you're going to do this business. So you really have to have people that think business-wise and how things are going to get done, because some people might be surprised at what it costs to actually run this sort of thing. If it's a social enterprise, they'll think, oh, yep, I thought I could just start doing this. Well, no, maybe you shouldn't. Well, you know, and sometimes that is the answer. You know, it's true. I mean, everyone has really good intentions, certainly. And I've guided people that way as well. They'll say, I want to do XYZ. And I'll say, well, have you found, is there another organization exactly that's doing something like that? Maybe you could partner with them and don't recreate the wheel, and maybe, you know, join forces. It might work out really well.
So, you know, the one thing that I think differentiates many nonprofits from their for-profit peers is the availability of volunteer help, you know, the whole volunteer management piece. How does working with a body of volunteers change the risk management scenario? And what should nonprofits do to reduce risk surrounding any work that volunteers do?
That's a big one. Volunteers, it can be huge, as you know. Some organizations have more volunteers than employees, and that's great. But it's the same sort of thing in that you've got to screen those volunteers. You've got to actually think about them as employees. They're unpaid employees, and they are representing you. So you've got to have volunteer agreements. Depending on what they're doing, you may want to do, some of them need to have level 2 and 3 screening, depending on what their involvement is, if it's, you know, working with children or near children. There is so much to that. And unfortunately, the world we're living in, you can't assume that someone coming to you has all good intent. You just never know. And unfortunately, in the world that we live in, seeing claims, you know, abuse claims, molestation claims, we see them. Could they have been prevented by better screening? Maybe. It's hard to know. But having those sort of policies, procedures in place to prevent as much as you can, once again, goes back to your branding and what the public knows. If the public hears that something horrible like that occurred and that you didn't have anything in place, I think they're going to choose somewhere else to put their funds for donation.
Huh. I mean, there's plenty to think about. I'm remembering my work that I did with the local nonprofit some years ago, and I realized that they'd been in operation for almost 20 years using almost strictly volunteer help to run a middle school, basically a camp for middle schoolers. And they had never run a background check on a single volunteer in that much time. And when I realized that had happened, my skin just hit the ceiling. I'm like, oh my God, how can you let that go? And the short answer that I got from the board was they've never had the money to do volunteer checks.
Yeah, that's a common response. And the response then to me would be, well, you can't afford not to, because it'll put you out of business. And it's funny, about 10 minutes before we started speaking today, I heard about one of our nonprofit accounts. It's actually not one that I personally handle, but it's one of our larger nonprofit accounts that does deal with children. And their premium literally doubled on their, I think it was all lines, and it doubled, and it's significant. It is, you know, from I think $300,000 to $600,000, something in that ballpark.
Good grief.
And it had to do with a couple of claims in that area. And this is just, it's a danger zone, and it's, you can't afford not to.
It's probably not the best time to try to switch gears. It seems like that should be more to say on this, on the very serious, you know, nature of what needs to happen here for nonprofits. But let's take the latter half of this episode and talk about events a little bit, because I, you know, obviously quite a few nonprofits out there drive huge events agendas for fundraising and for friend raising. What does a nonprofit have to do to make sure their events are covered? And obviously not just event insurance, not just, you know, oh, my event got rained out, therefore we need event insurance. But what does specific event liability look like, and how does a nonprofit handle that?
Well, typically the programs that we work with, a lot of them are geared for nonprofits. So many of the programs will include event coverage. They will include event coverage with some stipulations. So for instance, some of them may say that they won't cover, for instance, the bounce houses. Those are big no-nos, where it's very difficult to get coverage for bounce houses. They won't cover things like rodeos. They won't cover fireworks. So they'll have exclusions on there, but many of the programs do include event coverage. There are times, however, we do have to go outside the box and find a specific event policy that's a standalone policy for something unusual, or if it's something that might have, you know, 1,000 people and maybe their event coverage only covers up to 500. So we get these requests constantly. And typically, you know, the venue where they're going to have it will have requirements, and they'll say, for you to have the event here, here's what we need. And we'll look at that. And if sometimes we might have to go to those folks and say, this is really, you know, unnecessary. Can we talk about if we can reduce these requirements so that our client can afford to insure this event? So we look at both sides of it. So again, with any luck, where if it's something new and different, they're contacting us saying, hey, we're thinking about doing this. And then we can guide them. Most of our larger accounts have an annual, you know, they might have a couple galas, they might have things that are an annual event. So that's very easy. But it's when they say, you know, we're going to have our CEO rappel down the building downtown, right, to raise money. That's when we have to go, hang on a second, let's talk about this.
That's funny. So now we should not probably plan an event where someone's rappelling down into a bounce house in the middle of a rodeo.
Exactly. Good luck with that. Right. That's called self-insurance.
So, no, but there's a serious point I wanted to ask about here. In my most cynical moments, then, doesn't the possibility of insuring against an accident to take some of the fun out of an event?
Well, I mean, certainly, but it has to happen. And it's, I don't think that the event is it leads that way. I think, you know, you've got to, you know, no venue is going to let you come on their property without insurance anymore.
Right.
I think the days are over where it's not professional, where, you know, it's someone's property and they're really cool. We're going to go and we're going to have this thing anymore. I think that people have gotten very savvy. I know around here, finding event spaces is tricky. I mean, there are just so many places having events. Everybody wants to be the best event space and they've all got requirements and you've got to comply with them, even down to who you use to cater.
Yeah.
They get very specific. So I think it's just one of those things you have to do. Then you put it behind you and you have the event and you just make sure that you do everything possible to protect the public. So, because that's always the concern. I mean, if you've got employees working an event, they're covered under workers' compensation. But if you've got volunteers, you got to watch those volunteers, make sure that they know what they're doing. Depending on the coverage, they may or may not be covered by work comp. Most often they're not. You can also have volunteer coverage, but you've got to make sure that you're having these volunteers sign off on the known risks to what they're doing. Typically, I'll tell you, over the years, I haven't found too many claims from volunteers. I think that the vast majority of human beings are good. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of volunteers that are doing things that for a nonprofit event are also kind-hearted and don't want to impact the nonprofit for whom they're volunteering. But you still have to put those policies, procedures out there. Yeah, even though people say, well, we've never done this. Well, we're in a different time. You never know what's going to happen. We need to run this like a business and make sure that we're protecting you.
Right. And that, of course, is where having an agent comes in very handy to help you look at all the elements of risk and make sure that they're handled properly between both the venue and the entity and all the other third parties.
It's very true. Unfortunately, we are not known to be, you know, fun in that area, but they know it's necessary. You know, people know that when I come to their things, I'm going to be looking around saying, hey, did you see that? Did you see that? I mean, it's kind of a joke. It just comes naturally with the territory that we're looking out, because you think that'll never happen. And then guess what? It does.
Right.
You know, so there are so many things that can go wrong. We're the doom and gloom that you get that get invited.
Right. Can we take the last 2 minutes and talk a little bit about maybe alcohol? Because alcohol at events is always a big question for nonprofits. At least here in Georgia, you know, the laws state that a certain person needs to be pouring, otherwise the nonprofit is exposed. And I don't know what the laws in Florida is currently state around that, but what can you tell us?
Yeah, alcohol is definitely a big thing. And you know, people tend to open their wallets the more alcohol they drink. So people do want alcohol at these events. Sad, but true. And, you know, typically, again, the programs that provide the insurance have host liquor coverage. So if you're having the event and liquor's on the premise, you're typically okay here. The people that are doing the vending, that are doing the pouring, we're going to get a certificate from them. So we're going to make sure that those people are responsible. As long as the nonprofit isn't in the business of selling alcohol, they're typically covered. So, and what we always remind people or suggest is that if you're having an event that has an open bar, that you hand out tickets and restrict it to 2 tickets a person. And again, have policies, procedures in place, people monitoring things to make sure that you don't get into trouble.
Right. Sort of a designated thinker section.
I like that. Yes.
Thank you. So any parting words of advice for nonprofits out there that are beginning to look at their risk management practices?
I would say that they should... you know, again, have a business plan in mind. Think of running it as a business and what would any business want to do. Having a good partner is truly important. Having an agency that can help you map out what you need and also what you don't need. I mean, I've taken over accounts where they had more coverage, more limits in D&O, for instance, than maybe they needed. So being able to benchmark what do you need for the size that you're at, finding the right partner that can help you and guide you, I think, you know, takes a lot of that questioning away from you.
One more time for our listening audience, how does anyone find you?
The best way that most people find me is on LinkedIn. I'm just looking up Robin Mock, M-O-C-H. You can look up mewilson.com, find me there. You can Google my name. I think I'm pretty easy to find because I don't think there are too many M-O-C-H mocks out there.
Right. Right. Same here. If folks want to ask the Snapcast any questions, please find us at the nonprofitsnapcast.org, where you can actually go to listen to full episodes, or our Facebook page, which is, you just search for the Nonprofit Snapcast on Facebook and you'll find us. We actually want your input for what we should cover on future episodes. So please do drop us a line and let us know what you'd like to talk about. In the meantime, thank you, Robin. This has been great. I think the information's been very helpful. Maybe sometime in the future we can do this again.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Mickey.
Thanks for joining us.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.